With many observers noticing more religious representation and diversity at the DNC gathering, I wanted to get the thoughts of the Reverend Dr. Derek Harkins, National Director of Interfaith Outreach for the Democratic National Committee. Derek, it was a mammoth production, but you all made it look really easy. I hope you're as pleased with it as I was.
Well, Welton, thank you so much. And it was, you're right, it was a gargantuan task. I think back in maybe late May, early June, when we knew we were going to be making some major changes, even at that point, not knowing that it was going to look the way that it ended up looking or being completely virtual, I don't know that we would have conceived of how well it would have come across. We were very pleased with the clarity of messaging. Very pleased. The vice president, I think last night, I've heard many people speak to the idea that this was one of the strongest, if not strongest, speeches of his career. And you're right about the presence of faith and engagement around faith. We couldn't be more pleased about the presence of that part of the conversation in the primetime elements of the convention, during our council and caucus segments during the day as well. We had record-breaking numbers of people who tuned in for the Interfaith Council, but even also the other councils where the intersection of faith was certainly part of the conversation.
There were people saying, yes, there were more religious themes, there were more religious voices, and that includes not just in mainline pieces of the religious community, but you also included secular identities and voices in a way that was really, really helpful. I'm assuming that was all deliberate, was it?
Absolutely. I think in America in 2020, if one is going to have a conversation about the impact and the presence of faith, you are not doing responsible due diligence if you don't consider the fact that that is a much broader realm of conversation than it ever used to be. In fact, our vice presidential nominee sort of embodies that in a sense, coming from a household with a Christian and Hindu parent and then marrying a Jewish man, and at the same time sort of really representing that broader conversation that I think a lot of Americans have become more familiar with and more comfortable with. So when we thought about who needed to be the voices that needed to be part of this conversation, we couldn't have gone into this without considering that broad spectrum. And I'll even dare say, making sure that we were focused on being strongly inclusive of non-Abrahamic faiths, making sure as well as even the secular and humanist communities were certainly a part of the conversation as well. So we feel very good about having put that effort forth and it having been successful.
Around here, we've been referring to the Biden-Harris ticket as a virtual interfaith alliance. Do you have a sense of how significant those identities are to the candidates and to their agendas?
That's a great question. First of all, you know, I think we've had a wonderful amount of history and experience hearing Joe Biden speak into the importance of and the significance of his faith. And I'm, of course, as we know, part of that born out of great personal tragedies. And at the same time, I love the fact that he lifts up, you know, I think probably because of Joe Biden, someone we're familiar with, Soren Kierkegaard, has probably been Googled far more than anyone would have ever expected, because when he talks about faith, seeing best and clearly in the dark, but he speaks so authentically about his faith and coming out of a Catholic context. So that's significant. And in these last several days, we were on a call with Senator Harris last weekend, and to hear her talk about the impact and importance of her own faith, and to talk about the nature of faith being a verb, and being able to talk about how it impacts only when we understand how we care for one another. And she talked about her growing up. And so that narrative is there. I think both of them have a level of comfort, but maybe even more so, it's the contrast. And I'm not going to pile on about the present, occupant of the Oval Office, and I'm not going to stand in the position of making any assessment about his faith. But here's what I will say. I will say that in the context of both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they can talk fully and authentically and freely about how their faith anchors their moral and ethical perspective and gives them the encouragement and the endurance to make their way through even difficult circumstances. And I'm glad that that's part of a conversation now that, you know, I've been trying to listen assiduously and have not heard that from the other side. So, yes, I think that their conversation or their talking about their faith and how it will impact how they perceive and see the importance of the priorities that they're holding to is going to be a continuing theme.
Derek, I hate to say it, but we both know that there are some on the progressive side of American politics who are uncomfortable with and even some hostile to religion. The reasons vary, but I wonder what kind of feedback you've received to the religious leaders featured throughout the convention, as well as the rich variety of interfaith events the DNC and the Biden campaign organized this week?
That's a great question. And I'll say it this way. I feel that, first of all, as I've said, because we have worked, I think, responsibly and energetically to make sure that there's a broad representation and perspective, I think that's helpful to let people know that obviously we are not lifting up or trumpeting one particular religious tradition. Both candidates themselves have said that. Senator Coons, in an amazing speech last night at the convention, spoke to that as well, as he even talked about the vice president's faith. I think what we have to make sure that we do as Democrats is own the messaging around the importance of faith and how it, again, can anchor and mobilize and motivate people to do the right and equitable and just things that benefit everyone, as opposed to the messaging that we hear on the other side, where faith is restrictive, where faith is exclusive, where faith indeed is suppressive based on the way people would like faith to be entered into the conversation. So the responsibility is on us to continue that messaging. And if there are concerns that are ever raised, I think we can always point to our track record, as I've said, of A, being very intentionally inclusive, but then also understanding that faith is a part of a larger conversation. And I'll just say, one of the things that I think helps that is in our interfaith council, one of our co-chairs is a member of the secular humanist community, and helps to often bring that perspective to bear, which I think is wonderful, because it's always a very affirming thing as opposed to a divisive thing. And that's a great way to, I think, address the issues that you're raising.
Where would you like to see the party do even better in its outreach to people who value faith, whether their own or whether a universal value, as well as religious liberty?
That's a wonderful question. I think that more often than not, when we do conversations, as we've been doing now, as you can only imagine, for many, many months with faith leaders, faith groups, and I think people understand that, as opposed to saying, okay, well, we're going to come in here with our toolkit and realign, whether it's the platform or X, Y, or Z, more often than not, I think what we're hearing from people is, we simply want to be able to be part of that larger conversation. And the Democratic Party has the blessing, and maybe in some people's perspectives, the burden of being a big tent. And because we are a big tent, we've got to be able to be comfortable with a broad spectrum of perspectives. And even when it comes to the context of faith, and as you were just saying before, how there's some people who maybe cast a wary eye around the issue of faith in the public square, but then there are other people who can point to a long, incredible legacy. We have been celebrating the incredible legacy of a John Lewis and a C.T. Vivian over the space of these last couple of weeks. And both of them are a full testimony to how it is that faith communities fuel and energize people to do the right thing for the right reasons for all people. And so I think that that's, again, the kind of messaging that we have to remember to share, and that to let faith communities know they're part of that larger conversation.
Derek, are there steps toward that kind of plan for the last weeks before the election?
One of the things that we're making sure of is, and here's a place of engagement that everybody can, so to speak, agree on. we know that faith communities still, even with the societal changes that we're going through, and even in the midst of COVID-19, that faith communities often still represent the nexus, the central point for larger communities. We certainly know, of course, you know, as an African-American preacher, I can say that yet still, you know, the Black church is very much that nexus point in the community. So therefore, the place for educating, organizing, and mobilizing. One of the things that we are able to say to people, and this doesn't even have to have a partisan angle to it, is that equipping people to be able to exercise their franchise to vote this go around is going to include educating them around the whole process, because we know it's going to be very different this go around by way of COVID-19, by way of voting by mail, by way of early voting, absentee voting, et cetera. So making sure that faith communities are part of that effort to equip and educate people around the particulars of this cycle, if you will, and then to mobilize, to do the organizing, I should say, to make sure that folk do whatever it is that they need to do by way of getting their ballots turned in. And then, of course, I think that's a way we can say to faith communities, we see you, and it's not us saying we're only going to do this if you vote for the Biden-Harris ticket. We're saying that we know it's important for America for people to exercise their franchise. So we feel that that's a very authentic way to engage with faith communities, and then also for them to be able to share out the priorities and the policies that they're hearing from the Biden-Harris ticket, and hopefully let their constituencies weigh those and consider them in light of what they see as their own priorities.
Derek, it really breaks my heart to see the political religious right pervert the language of religious freedom in the service of partisan politics. One great risk of that kind of behavior is the loss of confidence in public religion for people across the ideological spectrum. I would love to hear your thoughts on that, as well as on how we make sure that progressive people don't fall into the same trap of politicizing religion.
It's really, you're right, Welton. It's unfortunate and tragic that the right has sought to weaponize the concept of religious freedom for the very reasons that you're speaking of, for to be restrictive and exclusive. And I think part of what has to happen, what continues to need to be the way in which we advocate around this, is that religious freedom in this incredibly further multifaceted landscape that we now have in America as it relates to religious traditions is one where one is allowed to exercise their authenticity and faith fully and freely, but at the same time understanding that the exercise of my faith in definition cannot be a restricted and punitive endeavor to you or anyone else. And I think that that's part of the dichotomy here. I think the religious right has decided that they'll use, and this is so sad because they'll use this as one element. I question how sincere some of those who advocate around religious freedom on the right are when they see it as simply a tool to sort of ideologically imprint their perspective on society and culture. I feel like, you know, it's interesting, as we saw the most recent Supreme Court ruling that speaks to this. I think it says, well, wait a minute. Yes, we are a nation that honors the ability of religious traditions to exist, but at the same time, those religious traditions cannot be punitive or exclusionary to Americans in the free exercise of commerce, of all those things that, of course, you know, we understand to hold as values in America. So I think it's a fine line to draw, but at the same time, I think that there are plenty of voices that speak to the issue of religious freedom in a way that lifts up the positive elements of this, as opposed to, as I said before, it being weaponized as restrictive and punitive.
The Reverend Dr. Derek Harkins is a longtime faith leader, organizer, and influential advisor to President Barack Obama, a powerful public speaker, Dr. Harkins currently serves as National Director of Interfaith Outreach at the Democratic National Committee. Derek, it's been too long since we talked with each other, but it's great to connect again. And I thank you so much for taking time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Well, Tim, thank you so much. And thank you for your continued voice in this important conversation. Thanks again.